Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Life Tributes. Nancy Lee Davidson Jordan. 129-1935 to 221-2024. Nancy Jordan passed quietly Wednesday, the 21st of February, after an extended struggle with dementia. She was preceded in death by her husband, Jack G. Jordan, also of Midland, her son, Craig A. Jordan of Dallas, and her sister, Nina L. Thompson of Fort Collins, Colorado. She is survived by her son, Michael D. Jordan, and his wife, Grace S. Jordan, and their children, Catherine Jordan and her husband, Joshua B. Jordan, Madeline Jordan, and Craig Jordan's son, Sean Jordan. Services will be held graveside at Rest Haven Cemetery at 11 a.m., March the 2nd. Dr. Steve Shore, a First Presbyterian Midland officiant, all are welcome. Jacob Taylor Baker, 513-1992 to 130-2024. On January 30th, 2024, Jacob Taylor Baker departed from this earth to reach the next life. Jacob is survived by his mother, Paula Baker, and his father, Jeffrey Thomas Baker, his brother, Joshua Tyler Baker, in addition to his grandmother, Lydia Castellan Flores of Midland, and his extended family of aunts and uncles who live throughout Texas. Funeral services are scheduled for Thursday, February 29th, 2024, at 2 p.m. at Fairview Cemetery, 1620 North A Street in Midland. Services are under the direction of Willowbrook Funeral Home. Francis Wynell Nell Seitz, 1124-1927 to 218-2024. Francis Wynell Nell Seitz, 96, of Midland, passed away Sunday, February 18th. Nell was born in 1927 in Big Lake, Texas, to Ralph Lamar and Jenny Matt Brown. Nell was preceded in death by her husband Tom and her son David Thomas Seitz Jr. and his wife Sherry Seitz, her parents Ralph and Jenny Matt Brown, her brother Ralph Brown, and her sister Jane Fisher. She is survived by her son Ralph Seitz and wife Janet Seitz of Midland, Texas, her daughter Mary Seitz Lurch, and husband Chris Lurch of Mountain Home, Texas, 8 grandchildren, numerous great-grandchildren and nieces, and a nephew and a great-great-grandson. A memorial service is scheduled for 10:30 a.m. Thursday, February 29th, in the chapel of First Baptist Church in Midland, Texas. Lewis James Jim Chase, Jr., 1120-1947 to 220-2024. Lewis James Jim Chase, Jr. passed away peacefully in Midland on Tuesday, February 20th, 2024. Jim was born to Lewis James Chase, Sr. and Elizabeth B. Johnson Chase in Abilene, Texas on November 20th, 1947. Jim is survived by Ashley and her husband Marcello Molfino and grandson Jack Cooper Molfino, Jennifer Chase, Vicky Verrett Chase, and wife Vicky Webb Chase, as well as his brother Mike Chase and wife Rose, nephew Jeff Chase and family, and many other friends and relatives. He is preceded in death by his parents, Lewis and B., his nephew Brian Scott Chase, and other members of the Chase family whom he loved dearly. Sylvia Martinez. Sylvia Martinez, 61, of Midland, passed away February 20th, 2024. Viewing will be from 8 o'clock a.m. to 9 o'clock p.m., Monday, February 26, 2024, at Nallie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with a rosary being recited at 7 o'clock p.m. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 o'clock a.m. Tuesday, February 27, 2024, at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Enrique Velasco III. Enrique M. Velasco III, 46, passed away on Wednesday, February 21st, 2024. Viewing will be Sunday, February 25th, 2024, from 12 o'clock p.m. to 9 o'clock p.m., with a rosary beginning at 7 o'clock p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral Mass is set for Monday, February 26, 2024, at 10 o'clock a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Funeral Mass is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Wrongful death dispute. New York doctor's husband sues Disney Parks and Resorts. Doctor died after alleged guarantees that restaurant food was allergen-free. Orlando, Florida. The husband of a New York doctor who died shortly after dining at a Disney Springs restaurant last year accused Walt Disney Parks and Resorts of negligence in a 19-page lawsuit filed in Florida. Jeffrey Piccolo is seeking in excess of $50,000 in the wrongful death of Kanakporn Tangswan, a doctor at New York University Langone Hospital in Manhattan, in the lawsuit filed February 22nd in Orange County, Florida. The lawsuit states that Tangswan had dinner at Raglan Road Irish Pub on October 5th, 2023, with her husband and his mother. Tangswan had a severe allergy to nuts and dairy products and informed the waiter that she required, quote, allergen-free food, end quote. The couple questioned the waiter about various items on the menu, according to the lawsuit. The waiter then asked the chef, quote, whether certain foods could be made allergen-free, end quote, before returning to the table and confirming they could. The couple asked the waiter several more times to be absolutely sure the food would be allergen-free before Tangswan ordered a fritter, scallops, and onion rings, the lawsuit said. When the food arrived, some items did not contain, quote, allergen-free flags, end quote, prompting the doctor and her husband to ask the waiter if the items were nut and dairy-free. The waiter, quote, guaranteed, end quote, that the food was allergen-free, the lawsuit said. Around 8 p.m., after finishing dinner, the doctor and her mother-in-law went shopping separately at Disney Springs while Piccolo returned to their room with the leftover food, the lawsuit said. About 45 minutes later, Tangswan was having difficulty breathing when she entered Planet Hollywood and collapsed to the floor. The lawsuit said she had self-administered an EpiPen while suffering from the allergic reaction. Her mother-in-law began calling to meet back up with her, but the calls went unanswered. According to the lawsuit, the mother-in-law returned to the hotel and she called Tangswan's phone again. This time someone answered and said Tangswan had been taken to a hospital. The doctor died at the hospital, the lawsuit said. A medical examiner's investigation determined she died as a result of, quote, anaphylaxis due to elevated levels of dairy and nut in her system, end quote, the lawsuit said. The lawsuit alleges that Raglan Road failed to educate, train, and or instruct its employees to make sure food was allergen-free. Walt Disney World and Great Irish Pubs Florida did not immediately respond to emails seeking comment on the lawsuit. VA Healthcare Network to hold town hall. Opportunity for veterans, caregivers, and families to communicate with senior leaders. The VA Heart of Texas Healthcare Network will hold a virtual veteran town hall Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. The virtual veteran town hall is an opportunity for Texas veterans, their caregivers, and families to communicate directly with VA Heart of Texas Healthcare Network senior leaders. Topics to be discussed include Health Connect, Clinical Contact Center, and Tele-EC, the Veteran Experience, VISN Priorities and VA Healthcare Priorities to Action, P2A, Medical Identity Theft Awareness. Led by Dr. Wendell Jones, VA Heart of Texas Healthcare Network, Veterans Integrated Service Network, VISN 17, encompasses most of the state of Texas, approximately 240,000 square miles, and its administrative offices in Arlington. VISN 17 oversees 7 healthcare systems: VA North Texas, Central Texas VA, West Texas VA, Amarillo VA, El Paso VA, South Texas Veterans, and VA Texas Valley Coastal Bend. Of the 1.6 million veterans in the VISN 17 area, more than 636,000 are enrolled for care with us. This large geographic area ranges from urban centers such as Dallas-Fort Worth, San Antonio, and Austin, to largely rural areas such as Bonham and Kerrville, to the rapidly expanding lower Rio Grande Valley. Several military installations in El Paso, Central, and South Texas afford the network many opportunities to collaborate with the Department of Defense. Interested participants can participate by dialing 833-980-3641 or online at access.live/TXVA Town Hall. This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition for Saturday, March 2nd, 2024. Legacy FFA helps in relief efforts for victims of Panhandle wildfires. For Legacy Agricultural Sciences teacher and FFA advisor Desiree Farmer, one of the mottos of the programs she teaches is, quote, living to serve, end quote. That is the point she emphasized during a phone interview on Friday morning, while she and a team of volunteers began the journey to help victims of the largest wildfire in Texas history. Quote, we anticipated having one stock trailer, end quote, she said. Quote, but now we have a total of 7 trucks which are headed for the area, end quote. The relief effort largely grew from a social media post asking for supplies for the victims of the wildfires. Quote, one of our students started connecting on Facebook with other AG teachers and students, end quote, Farmer said. Quote, our students want to help, end quote. However, it was not just about providing supplies to the towns of Canadian and Fritch, but also because of something significantly larger. Quote, the other AG teacher and I were vested in the livestock, end quote, Farmer said. Quote, we initially reached out to our director and asked if we could bring animals back if needed, end quote. Another part of the relief effort provided by the Legacy FFA students are the stories that are just beginning to be told after the devastation of the largest wildfire in Texas has occurred. Quote, Canadian has completely lost their AG barn, end quote, Farmer said. Quote, a lot of their students have lost everything, like their homes, their clothing, end quote. Farmer explained that as these communities begin to piece their lives back together, another component of the relief effort will be the cleanup efforts. Quote, we have a barbecue team that we coach, end quote, she said. Quote, one of the barbecue teams was contacted by an organization called Operation Barbecue Relief, end quote. Farmer said the end goal is to provide resources to feed these families once the fires are contained and it is safe to be there. Farmer isn't alone in her efforts to provide relief to the Panhandle families. She is joined by another Legacy Ag Science teacher and FFA advisor, Garrett DeVault. Additionally, Jimmy Howard, Cooper Millsap, and Cody Maxwell have all volunteered as drivers. PureFrac, a Midland-based hydraulic fracturing company, has also joined the volunteer relief efforts. Quote, they, PureFrac, are taking 2 of the semi-rigs to deliver the hay needed for the livestock, end quote, Farmer said. Of the relief effort, Farmer said it honestly blew up and became large-scale very quickly. Quote, I just want to say thank you to the community. We received a huge, generous donation from a local church and also Tractor Supply, end quote, she added. For more information on how to help AG students and their families, please email Desiree.Farmer@MidlandISD.net. Below is a published list of the items that are being requested. Ag-related requests. Fencing supplies. T-posts, T-post drivers, pliers, wire, barbed wire, hot wire, etc. Livestock water buckets, livestock water tanks, feed troughs and feed scoops, horse and cattle feed, livestock halters, all species, dog food, cat food, small animal crates slash carriers, small animal water slash feed bowls, dog slash cat collars and leashes, old rowels, Dawn dish soap. First responder requests. Wet wipes, socks, gloves, chapstick, Tylenol slash Advil. Requests specific to Fritch FFA. Water, non-perishable foods, blankets, towels, deodorant, bar soap, toothbrushes, toothpaste, totes slash storage bin, backpacks, diapers, basic first aid supplies. Band-aids, bandages, Neosporin, hydrogen peroxide, rubbing alcohol, Tylenol, Advil, allergy medicine. Permian Basin production continues to boost Chevron. In one way or another, through its own holdings or legacy assets acquired when it purchased other companies, Chevron has been active in the Permian Basin for most of the 100 years the region has been producing oil and natural gas. In recent years, the oil giant has increasingly leaned on its Permian Basin holdings to produce more as it marches towards its goal of producing 1 million barrels of Permian Basin crude by 2025. Quote, "We are on track to deliver 1 million barrels a day in 2025, end quote, said Ryder Booth, vice president of Chevron's Mid-Continent Business Unit. Speaking in his office in Chevron's campus near the Scarborough Sports Complex, Booth said the company grew its Permian oil production 10% in 2023 to 867,000 barrels a day, and will raise production another 10%, exiting 2024 at 900,000 barrels per day. Quote, "We have high aspirations in our growth from the Permian Basin," end quote, he said. Booth is quick to credit the company's team for continuing to boost the company's output. Quote, "Our employees are amazing," end quote, he said. Quote, "They're dedicated, they're resourceful, they're very innovative. They're West Texan in nature. There's not a challenge they cannot overcome," end quote. In the fourth quarter earnings call with investors, Chevron Chairman and Chief Executive Officer Mike Wirth noted, quote, "We're constantly looking to learn and improve. As I mentioned earlier, we've seen significant improvements in drilling time, completion time placed on production this year. And as you continue doing things, you find more and more efficiencies. We can bring more technology to bear," end quote. Booth noted that the rigs drilling for Chevron can drill today what once took 2 days to drill just 4 years ago. Its frac fleets can complete 50% more lateral feet than just 4 years ago. Another benefit is that Chevron has a footprint that extends beyond its holdings. Booth said the company has working interest in one out of every five wells in the Permian Basin. That allows the company to take significant amounts of data from its partners and use those benchmarks to generate new ideas to improve performance, improve efficiencies, and meet corporate goals. Wirth told investors of the $5 billion Chevron will spend in the Permian in 2024, 50% will target the Delaware in New Mexico, 25% the Midland Basin, and 25% the Delaware in Texas. Because of its holdings, Booth said Chevron is able to focus on its primary benches while closely watching how its partners fare in the secondary benches and leverage those learnings. The shale revolution that saw Permian output surge to a record 6 million barrels a day is in early innings yet, said Booth. And with global demand for affordable, reliable, ever-clean energy continuing to grow, he expects the industry to continue to advance. The world uses 102 million barrels of oil every single day, he said. Quote, "That's a barrel of oil from Pecos that's going to Corpus Christi or Houston, refined or shipped as raw crude to a refinery in Asia, and then to the end user. That's a remarkable supply chain," end quote, Booth said. Midland College approves two new programs. Two new programs are natural gas compression and automation. Midland College Board of Trustees voted to implement two new programs, natural gas compression and automation, during its board meeting on Thursday. Eric Gutierrez, Department Chair and Associate Professor for Automotive Technology, Diesel Technology, and Energy Technology, said the natural gas compression program became an idea after Midland College faculty discovered how prevalent natural gas compression service companies are in the Permian Basin. Quote, "The largest natural gas compression service companies, they call it the Three Horsemen, Kodiak, Arkrock, and USA Compression, have 70% of their assets here in the Permian Basin," end quote, Gutierrez said. Gutierrez said Thursday that the sector is about to see growth and Midland College can begin to mold natural gas compression technicians who can begin to fill those jobs. Quote, "The demand is calculated in BCFs, which stands for billion cubic feet per day. In the next few years, we're going to see an increase of about 15 BCFs. What that translates to is about 7.5 million horsepower increase domestic here in the U.S., end quote, he said. Gutierrez added that the area will need to increase the amount of local natural gas compression technicians by about 750 to 1,000. Pete Avalos, Dean of Applied Technology, said the program will start off with an occupational skills award through the college's diesel pathway. Then students will work to obtain a diesel certification certificate before moving on to natural gas compression curriculum, which will culminate in an associate's degree. Quote, we started out really intentional on providing students with several entry and exit points. In doing that, we found that we could develop a gateway certificate with our occupational skills award and our entry-level certificate, end quote, he said. Avalos said the curriculum is based on conversations with local industry leaders on the needs of the sector. Quote, this is definitely something that is needed. I see it all the time. We, his business, puts the compressors together. We don't work on them, but we run all the piping and plumbing to them, and every facility now has compressors, up to 3, 4, 5 of them, end quote, Midland College board member Adrian Carrasco said. The program was approved, and the plan is for new students to start in August for the fall 2024 semester. Avalos said the automation and natural gas compression programs will overlap in some ways. Quote, there are 150 data points on the compressor that Ariel, Corporation manufacturer of compressors, runs currently, and all that data is driven through the automation piece, end quote, Avalos said. Avalos said students in the automation degree can learn to monitor compressors and conduct preventative analysis of a compressor before it breaks. The automation program will also have a similar structure to the compression program. Students will first earn an occupational skills award before moving to a level 1 automation certificate, and then an advanced automation certificate, which will culminate in an associate's degree. Conflict continues over Martin County recycling facility. Conflict continues between Martin Water Midstream and the Circle 6 Baptist Camp over Martin Water's proposed Richards Recycling Facility in Martin County next to the camp. The state's three railroad commissioners unanimously approved the midstream company's permit for the facility that will gather, store, treat, and transport produced water. The facility will utilize fixed pipe infrastructure, gathering and transporting produced water from the well site to multiple recycling facilities. Treatment of the produced water with an industry-leading partner with a proven recycling technology and reselling the treated water to operators for reuse in subsequent drilling needs. Circle 6 has filed a motion for a rehearing. Brian Kolboth, the camp's executive director, told the Reporter-Telegram by email. Before approving the permit, Commissioner Jim Wright urged the company to consider any reasonable opportunity to relocate the pits, a request seconded by Commissioner Wayne Christian before he voted to approve the permit. Martin Water spokesperson Lauren Spreen said the company has done an economic assessment for reconfiguring the facility within the permit's parameters. While moving the pits would have an exorbitant cost, she said the company is looking at moving the storage tanks away from the camp and believe that could be done while staying true to the permit. Quote, we are going to try our best to do what the commissioners tell us to do, end quote, she said. Communication with landowners is key to a smooth pathway to a new facility, said John Duran, vice chairman, XRI. He told the Reporter-Telegram by email that the company's, quote, long-term history of partnering with our landowners in West Texas has been central to our success as the largest recycler in the Permian Basin. We are very forthright with all stakeholders when we build out our facilities, so there are no surprises from the permitting phase through construction and then on to full-scale operation of our facilities and infrastructure, end quote. Rusty Smith, executive director of the Texas Produced Water Consortium at Texas Tech, told the Reporter-Telegram by email that since Martin Water Midstream is not a member, he couldn't comment specifically. Quote, we do have numerous members who, along with the consortium, are working on proving that produced water in the Permian Basin can be treated to environmentally safe levels for beneficial reuse outside of the industry, utilizing multiple different treatment technology systems, end quote, he wrote. He added, quote, we are currently working with our members, the Railroad Commission of Texas and the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, To establish our own pilot projects, as well as establishing other pathways for the consortium to analyze and provide input on the viability of member treatment operations that may occur separate from our internal pilot projects, end quote. Youth softball coach in West Texas gets 8 years in prison for child pornography charges. A former volunteer youth softball coach in West Texas was recently sentenced to federal prison after pleading guilty to child pornography charges. Patricio Javier Serrano, 36, of Marfa, was sentenced in a federal court in Pecos to 97 months in prison for one count of possession of child pornography and one count of transportation of child pornography. United States Attorney Jaime Esparza for the Western District of Texas announced in a Friday press release. Serrano was sentenced by U.S. District Judge David Counts to serve 5 years in prison for the transportation charge and 37 months for the possession charge consecutively, according to Esparza's office in the release. He was facing up to 20 years for each charge. Counts determined Serrano's sentence after considering U.S. sentencing guidelines as well as other statutory factors. Quote, this case demonstrates that predators cannot transmit or receive child sexual abuse material and hide behind their screens without risk of prosecution, end quote, Esparza said in the Friday release. Quote, thank you to our local, state, and federal law enforcement partners for their collaboration to help make this community and our children safer, end quote. According to court documents, FBI agents executed a search warrant and discovered Serrano was in possession of multiple photos and videos depicting child sexual abuse material stored on his cell phone and on his phone's web browser. Serrano was arrested on May 11, 2023, and has since remained in federal custody. He pleaded guilty to both charges in the indictment without a written plea agreement in October. Quote, it's unsettling when you learn that someone working so closely with our children and in our communities can possess such predatory tendencies, end quote. John Morales, FBI El Paso Special Agent in Charge, said in the release. Quote, the FBI Special Agents and the Alpine Resident Agency, along with our Homeland Security Investigations, Texas Department of Public Safety, and Marfa Police Department, make it a top priority to protect children from victimization by working to investigate predators involved with the production, distribution, and possession of child sexual abuse material and ensure they are held accountable for their heinous actions, end quote, Morales continued. Quote, FBI will continue to dedicate our resources to identify these individuals and bring them to justice, end quote. The FBI, Texas Department of Public Safety, and Marfa Police Department investigated the case. Assistant U.S. Attorney Amy Greenbaum and Kevin Caton prosecuted the case. The case was brought as part of Project Safe Childhood, a nationwide initiative to combat the growing epidemic of child sexual exploitation and abuse launched in May 2006 by the Department of Justice. Led by U.S. Attorney's Offices and CEOS, Project Safe Childhood marshals federal, state, and local resources to better locate, apprehend, and prosecute individuals who exploit children via the internet, as well as to identify and rescue victims. More information about Project Safe Childhood is available online at justice.gov/PSC. Life Tributes, Barbara J. McMillan Bright, 8/31/1937 to 2/19/2024. After a lengthy illness, Barbara J. McMillan Bright passed away on February 19, 2024. She was born on August 31, 1937, in Loveland, Texas, to Gordon and Effie McMillan. She was preceded in death by her parents and her grandson, Austin Fannin. She is survived by her three children, Kathy Fletcher of Santa Fe, New Mexico, Sam Bright of San Angelo, and Susie Perkins of Decatur. Seven grandchildren and three great-grandchildren. Also her sister, Patsy Staggs, and her brother, Butch McMillan. Memorial gifts may be made to jameslwest.org. Oil Report, Pioneer Natural Resources. Atlas Energy agrees to acquire high-crush assets. two major propant providers to Permian Basin oil and gas operators are planning to combine into what will become the country's largest propant producer and a leading logistics provider. Atlas Energy Solutions has agreed to acquire High Crush Inc.'s Permian Basin propant production assets and North American logistics operations in a deal valued at $450 million. Kyle Turlington, Vice President, Investor Relations with Atlas, told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview that the combination will give Atlas economies of scale much like those sought by exploration and production companies. In addition, he said it will allow Atlas to enhance its offerings to customers, broaden its customer base, and expand its market share in the Midland Basin. Quote, High Crush has a leading market share in wet sand, and we are primarily a dry sand producer, end quote, he said. Atlas is constructing a 42-mile electrified conveyor system to carry sand from Atlas Mine at Kermit into Lee County, New Mexico, and Turlington said the deal will offer the opportunity to add volumes to that system. Quote, we are excited about the deal, end quote, he said. Quote, High Crush has one of the most talented workforces in the industry and, especially on the plant side, will need all of them. I expect High Crush workforce will come over to Atlas, end quote. The combined entity will have production capacity expected to be about 28 million tons with 80% 2024 production capacity already contracted. Adds about 12 million tons per year of production capacity, of which about 5 million tons in Kermit is close to Atlas' existing Kermit facility and 7 million tons from Encore's distributed mining network. Expected to realize more than $20 million in annual synergies by 2026. Turlington said improved efficiencies have offset the decline in the rig count, though he said Atlas has seen a pickup in activity since the fourth quarter of 2023. Quote, we've seen activity come back. We've seen frac crews come back. We've seen a pickup in the volume of activity. We expect activity levels to stay level, slightly higher than where they are today, end quote, he said. Hard hats designed for better protection for oil field workers. Despite the technological advancements, despite advances in automation, despite advances in safety, drilling an oil well still requires human beings to be around heavy, unpredictable machinery. And while the fatality rate for oil and gas workers has decreased over the past few years, the industry still faces a fatality rate 7 times higher than for U.S. workers in general. Quote, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the oil and gas industry faces a fatality rate that is 7 times higher than that of U.S. workers in general. The study made by the CDC shows workers face several risks daily, including vehicle collisions, struck by, caught in, caught between hazards such as moving equipment, explosions and fires, and falls. Working from masts, drilling platforms, and additional elevated equipment all puts workers at risk of falling and subsequently at risk of traumatic brain injuries, or TBIs, end quote. According to Joe Brandel, Business Development Manager for North America Industrial Safety Market, MIPS. The study found that among serious injuries, 41.7% of all fatal injuries in the industry involve the head. Head injuries can also lead to TBIs and have long-term health impacts. Many accidents around the head do not occur linearly, but at an angle. These so-called rotational movements can act on the head and brain, which can lead to severe brain traumatic injuries. Brandel noted that the traditional hard hats used in the oil fields have changed little since they were introduced over 100 years ago and may fail in common workplace accidents. Type 1 hard hats are designed to protect wearers from impacts to the top of the head. The problem is these helmets often fail to protect the wearer from head injuries during slips, trips, and falls if they fall off and they fail to take into account rotational motion, a common cause of concussions. Quote, the brain is typically more sensitive to rotational motion than linear motion because it has shear properties similar to water or gel. When different parts of the brain move relative to each other because of rotational motion, the tissues can stretch, which can cause concussions or other brain injuries, such as TBIs, end quote, he explained. The MIPS safety system consists of a low-friction layer mounted inside the helmet. In a crash, the low-friction layer is designed to move slightly inside the helmet to help redirect forces away from the head. This is intended to help reduce the risk of brain injury. The system is integrated into safety helmets and hard hats, bringing the technology to oil and gas sites. The two helmet types under the ANSI/ISEA Z89.1 standard include Type 1 and Type 2 helmets. Type 1 helmets are designed to reduce the force of impact to the top of the wearer's head, while Type 2 helmets are designed to protect against side, lateral, impact to reduce the force of impact resulting from a blow that may be off-center, in addition to the top of the head. There are three classes of helmets: G, general; E, electrical; and C, conductive. For those in the oil and gas industry, Type 2 helmets, which can include chin straps, are increasingly being worn on job sites. This is an improvement from Type 1 helmets, which often fail to protect workers from head injuries resulting from slips, trips, and falls if they fall off the wearer's head, Brandel noted. Currently, employers are required to provide and maintain personal protective equipment, yet there are no regulations to ensure that it fits properly. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, has proposed to revise its PPE standard to explicitly require that helmets fit properly. The proposed revision would impact all employees who are potentially at risk of head injury from impact, flying or falling objects, and electrical shock or burns. Quote, ultimately, the key factors in PPE compliance are comfort and fit. Employees are far more likely to wear helmets and hard hats that fit correctly and comfortably. Proper PPE usage, including safety helmets, is a critical way to enhance safety and protect workers against accidents on the job, end quote, according to Brandel. Currently, MIPS has partnered with over 150 helmet manufacturers. Since its inception, the MIPS safety system has been included in more than 1,000 helmet models worldwide. New Mexico legislative session deemed positive for energy. New Mexico's annual legislative session ended in mid-February, and oil and gas producers are now grading its impact. Quote, as with so many legislative sessions, New Mexico's session has to be viewed through the scope of we don't get the opportunity to accomplish a lot of positive things, but what negative things you can prevent. That's the way we approach the sessions in New Mexico, end quote. Stephen Robertson, Executive Vice President, Permian Basin Petroleum Association, told Grant Swartzwelder, president of OTA Environmental Solutions, during his Oilfield Strong webinar. Chris Minton, government affairs advisor with Civitas Resources, noted this is the company's first experience with New Mexico legislative sessions, and he appreciated working with PBPA, New Mexico Oil and Gas Association, and others. It was an adjustment from his experience with Colorado legislative sessions, and he said he appreciated the opportunity to talk about how Civitas operates, its focus on being a good partner to local communities and the state, and its long-term plans for its operations in New Mexico. Quote, there were a lot of interesting pieces of legislation, some good, some bad, end quote, Mitten observed. Quote, the resolution of the session was positive for the industry, and I hope to work with our partners for a successful 2025 as well, end quote. Robertson noted that the 30-day session doesn't offer a lot of time to pass bills or resolutions, but at least in New Mexico, it lays the groundwork for legislation to be reintroduced in the next session. He cited as an example what is known as the Green Amendment, which says all New Mexico residents are entitled to a clean environment and which has been introduced three sessions in a row. Bills are heard in multiple House and Senate committees, and he said this amendment didn't make it out of the first committee, quote, which is a good sign there is not a lot of support, end quote. Another piece of legislation sought to overhaul the state's Oil and Gas Act, and both Robertson and Mitten agreed the state's Oil and Gas Act needs to be updated. But they raised concerns with the legislation's incorporation of required setbacks for oil field facilities without defining those facilities. Robertson said it wasn't clear if that would include natural gas flow lines, supplying gas to residences and businesses, and it could result in no construction close to any existing construction. Asked by Swartzwelder about the proposed changes to the Oil and Gas Act that would increase fines and penalties and increase bonding requirements, Robertson said that is a valuable conversation to have. Quote, around the bonding aspect in particular, because New Mexico has grown tremendously in production, end quote, Robertson said. People inside and outside the industry need to be aware of every well has an end life, he added. And there needs to be a comprehensive plan to take care of those assets at the end of their useful life. He said the industry questioned the point of raising fines, penalties, and bond requirements. Quote, what was the purpose of these specific amounts on certain fines or penalties, end quote, Robertson said, and opponents wondered how the extra funds would be used or if the motivation was to shut down wells. Mitten predicted that next year's session will bring such bills back, whether it's a rewrite of changes to the Oil and Gas Act or a narrower amalgamation of issues like requiring 98% capture of natural gas or bonding changes. Quote, we hope it's not similar to what we're facing in Colorado and more of a partnership with the administration and environmental community, end quote, Minton said. Quote, there are reasonable modifications that can be made, and the industry is willing to get to the table and discuss, end quote. Annual Water and Energy Conference heads to Busch Center. Busch Convention Center in downtown Midland will be the site of the 6th Annual Permian Basin Water and Energy Conference, hosted by the University of Texas Permian Basin's Shepherd Leadership Institute. Quote, the vision initially was to find ways to save water for our kids, end quote, observed Richard Brantley, 2024 conference chairman and senior vice president of operations at University Lands. Quote, recycling produced water is preserving our groundwater, end quote. The conference launches March 5th with a welcome reception at UTPB's Center for Energy and Economic Diversity, with the two-day conference March 6th and March 7th at the Busch Convention Center. ExxonMobil is serving as title sponsor this year. He said he plans to show attendees calculations that show the impact of recycling and reusing produced water. According to the Texas Water Development Board, the average Texan uses 189 gallons of water throughout their life. Recycling efforts from 2023 to 2024 saved 3.5 million human consumption days, Brantley said. Quote, that gets lost in the discussion, end quote. The conference will include keynote speakers from legislators to industry representatives, panel discussions, and networking opportunities, including job interview opportunities for the UTPB students working at the conference. Approximately 50 speakers and 30 corporate sponsors are lined up for the event. Brantley said the plan is to highlight the contributions of industry to not only alleviate the amount of water that needs to be injected underground, but also turn it into a valuable commodity. Quote, the Permian Basin produces 20 million barrels a day of water, and that water has to go somewhere every second of the day, end quote, he said. Ashley Kegley Whitehead, conference board member and chief communications officer at Infinity Water Solutions, said there remains a need for educating legislators, regulators, and the public about the efforts going into recycling and reusing produced water. She said the conference has evolved from its roots in discussing water management to not only managing water but mining and manufacturing, extracting critical minerals and molecules from the water and making it available for beneficial reuse. Several pilot projects researching its use in agriculture and in mineral extraction will be highlighted at the conference. Quote, it takes all disciplines in this arena of water management, end quote, agreed Brantley. Kegley Whitehead added that the conference has evolved from its regional focus to attracting national and even international participation. Drilling activity in the U.S. remains at 6-month high. Drilling activity continued at its highest level since September, as the rig count rose for a second consecutive week. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes said Friday the U.S. rig count it has issued weekly since 1944 added 3 rigs for 629 rigs at work nationwide. That's still 120 rigs or 16% below the 749 counted last year. The number of rigs drilling for crude oil also rose 3 to 506 rigs and also the highest since September, but still 86 rigs below the 592 reported last year. The number of rigs seeking natural gas dropped by 1 to 119 rigs. 35 fewer than the 154 drilling for natural gas the previous year. Texas was the only major producing state to report a decline, dropping 2 rigs to 299 rigs active statewide and down 67 rigs from 366 last year. New Mexico added 1 rig for 103, Alaska 2, Oklahoma 1, and West Virginia 1 joined New Mexico as major producing states to see gains. The Permian Basin added 1 rig for 315 rigs, down 34 rigs from 349 rigs drilling throughout the region last year. Eddy County, New Mexico, was the most active county in the Permian, with 53 rigs, down 2 for the week. Lee County, New Mexico, was second, adding 3 rigs, the largest gain among Permian counties, for 47 rigs. Martin County had 36 rigs, down 2 for the week. Reeves County was down 1 rig for 25, while Loving County had 24 rigs for a second week. Upton County reported 20 rigs a second week. Midland County had 19 rigs at work within county lines, up 2 for the week. Reagan and Ward counties each reported 14 rigs, unchanged for Reagan and up 1 for Ward. Culberson and Howard counties each had 11 rigs, up 1 for Culberson and down 1 Howard. Energy-focused software as a service firm in Veris said its U.S. rig count for the week ended February 23rd rose 8 rigs to 676, still 170 rigs or 20% below the 846 counted last year. ConocoPhillips, EOG Resources, and Occidental Petroleum each remain the top 3 U.S. operators with 30 rigs each. In Veris, Permian rig count dropped 1 rig to 329 from 330 the previous week and is 43 rigs or 12% below the 372 counted last year. The most active play, the Delaware Basin, had 181 rigs, up 3 for the week, but 18 rigs or 9% below the 199 seen last year. The second most active play, the Midland Basin, had 123 rigs, up 1 for the week, but 25 rigs or 17% below the 148 counted last year. In Veris trailing 30-day drilling permits by region, the Permian had 700 permits as of February 9th, down from 732 the previous week, but up from 688 the prior year. The Permian also continued to gain in frac crews, with 123 as of February 9th, up from 100 the previous week, but below 149 last year. ERCOT cost utilities an extra $90 million. A reserve program again caused wholesale price spikes. As Texans drove power demand to a wintertime record high during last month's deep freeze, power companies paid $90 million in wholesale costs the grid operator's independent monitor says could have been avoided, and that eventually could be passed along to their customers. The Electric Reliability Council of Texas' controversial reserve program, which caused price spikes totaling $12.5 billion last summer, jacked up pricing again during the January 15th through 17th cold snap, according to a new report from Potomac Economics, the third-party monitor. The program is meant to keep more backup electricity supply in reserve during periods of peak demand for use in case of emergencies. By removing supply from the market, though, it also drives up wholesale prices and costs to utilities. Quote, addressing these issues remains critical, end quote, Potomac said in a presentation Monday to an ERCOT committee. Quote, discussion with ERCOT has begun, end quote. The state grid operator declined Wednesday to elaborate on the status or focus of those talks. The, quote, all-in, end quote, costs of electricity were up 88% in 2023 from the year before, despite natural gas prices being 65% lower. Grid expert and author of the Texas Energy and Power newsletter, Doug Lewin, wrote in response to the Potomac report. That's in part because last summer's extreme heat drove up demand, he said, but also because ERCOT is likely procuring more reserve power than it needs under the program. That's in part because last summer's extreme heat drove up demand, he said, but also because ERCOT is likely procuring more reserve power than it needs under the program. Known as the ERCOT Contingency Reserve Service, the program was created to prevent blackouts like those that occurred during Winter Storm Uri in early 2021. but ERCOT's independent market monitor began sounding the alarm last year, saying the reserve service is taking more power than necessary off the marketplace when demand rises. ERCOT has denied that, but it also says the program will be improved with planned systems improvements. With its current systems, the reserve and regular markets don't communicate and can't adjust pricing for each other in real time. That means prices on the regular market are driven up when demand moves supply to the reserve market, where it's not always needed. Quote, excessively held reserves inflated prices during the storm, end quote, the Potomac presentation says of last month's situation. Quote, we estimate efficient energy prices would have lowered whole energy costs by more than $90 million, end quote. Such spikes immediately impact the power companies and power brokers buying and selling energy on ERCOT's marketplace. Eventually, the added costs could also be passed down to utility customers. A lawsuit alleging that has already started happening was filed 2 weeks ago against ERCOT's oversight body, the Public Utility Commission of Texas. The lawsuit alleges the PUC approved illegal rules changes that caused, quote, market chaos, end quote, without seeking public feedback. ERCOT CEO Pablo Vegas has pushed back on Potomac's wholesale cost assessments, calling the eye-popping multi-billion dollar figures misleading. The grid operator said it spent $608 million last year to secure the power it put in the Energy Reserve Program. Steady supply. Power supply was adequate during the January storm, the Independent Monitor's report says, with gas-fired power plants and wind power playing key roles. In San Antonio, the low temperature January 15th was 20 degrees. It fell to 19 on January 16th and 18 on January 17th. The tightest conditions came on the evening of January 16th when wind power dropped and battery storage sites were needed to help with power ramp up in the morning and evening when the state's cushion from solar energy drops. ERCOT, quote, managed the system reliably, end quote, during the storm, the monitor said of its ability to keep the power flowing. But despite power reserves levels never falling to emergency levels, prices still rocketed to $1,200 per megawatt hour January 16th from between $200 and $400 the day before. ERCOT has contended the costs of the reserve program outweigh the risk of not having enough power on hand. During a presentation to board members Tuesday, Vegas detailed the grid's activity during the January freeze, which brought on some of the state's lowest winter temperatures on record. ERCOT recorded 5 all-time winter demand records over the 3-day storm. Between 7 a.m. and 8 a.m. January 16th, Texans' power demand hit the highest winter level ever at 78,314 megawatts. Renewables step up. Vegas said conservation efforts curb demand in a meaningful way and that ERCOT will continue to explore demand response programs, which encourage customers to curb power use when demand is highest. Experts and consumer advocates have consistently pushed Texas utility companies and ERCOT, which manages the flow of power for 90% of the state, to pay regular customers for cutting back on power use during critical times, not just big businesses. Quote, I think that conservation is becoming a really visible and important part during these extreme weather events, end quote, Vegas said. He also pointed to strong solar power output in January, with the state using more solar power than ever before at one time in recent weeks. Batteries provided about 1.5% of total energy needs during the 3 biggest demand peaks over the 3-day freeze. Quote, that's going to continue to be a growing component of the resource mix during these times of need, end quote, Vegas said. Quote, so that's it's great to see the capacity that's available when we need them and the execution at that time, end quote. ERCOT CEO questions cost of connecting grid. 2 weeks after Democrats in Congress introduced a bill requiring the Texas power grid to connect to the national grids, CEO Pablo Vegas of the Electric Reliability Council of Texas said such discussions need to consider if more outside connections is the most economically worthwhile way to keep the lights on. Quote, we're not debating that there could be reliability or resiliency benefits by having interconnections. The question is it the best way to spend the dollars? End quote. Vega said Tuesday at ERCOT's Board of Directors meeting. The alternative is to invest in additional in-state transmission lines that deliver electricity across long distances, as well as in other resources, he said. ERCOT operates the power grid that delivers electricity across 90% of Texas. Its job is to ensure supply and demand are always balanced. In February 2021, it initiated blackouts that left millions without power for days during freezing temperatures as it sought to prevent demand from overtaking supply, narrowly averting a total blackout that could have left parts of Texas in the dark for weeks. Texas is unique in largely having its own power grid with limited connections to the other large U.S. systems. That leaves the state with little ability to import power in times of scarcity on the grid. During the 2021 freeze, each additional gigawatt of transmission ties between ERCOT and the southeastern U.S. could have saved nearly $1 billion while keeping the heat on for hundreds of thousands for Texans, according to a 2021 study by Grid Strategies, a consulting firm. Politicians and energy companies in Texas have long opposed more substantial connection to other grids for fear it would bring increased federal regulation. The newly proposed bill, introduced by Representatives Greg Kasar, Democrat Austin, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Democrat New York, seeks to bring the ERCOT grid under federal oversight. A direct current line that would connect ERCOT to grids in the southeast is in the works, and the Public Utility Commission of Texas, which regulates ERCOT, is surveying the power industry on possibly building more. Vegas, for his part, seemed skeptical. Building more DC ties, already costly on its own, would also require building significant additional transmission infrastructure, he said. By opening up the ERCOT electricity market to other states, Texans could benefit when the price of electricity imports is low. But prices within ERCOT might rise when the price of imports is high, he said. Because extreme weather events such as heat waves and cold snaps are not constrained by state lines, other grids may not be able to export much power to Texas when the ERCOT needs it most, Vegas said. Quote, if it's not available during those periods of time, is the investment worth it for the limited amount of time that it actually is available to transfer power, end quote, he said. Vegas also hit on a major area focus for state officials who have proposed initiatives to encourage development of more natural gas power plants, suggesting DC ties could be counterintuitive to their efforts. Quote, DC ties could have the effect of chilling new generation investment inside of the ERCOT region, end quote, because developers could locate elsewhere and still sell their power to Texas, he said. Community. Seven Brew Coffee opens first Midland stand. We'll open a second stand later this spring. Seven Brew made the brand's first expansion to Midland by celebrating the opening of their new coffee stand at 2201 West Texas Avenue and donating $1,500 to the Midland Humane Coalition. Quote, we are thrilled to bring Seven Brew's culture, dedication to customer service, and delicious drink combinations to the Midland community, end quote, said Zach Cockman, director of franchisees for Seven Brew Midland. Quote, at Seven Brew, we aim to cultivate kindness and joy wherever we are by serving our community and supporting organizations who do the same. Because of this, we're proud to celebrate the opening of our first Midland stand by donating to the Midland Humane Coalition, end quote. Members of the Midland Humane Coalition attended the grand opening to receive the donation from Seven Brew. Quote, on behalf of everyone at the Midland Humane Coalition, we are thankful for the generous donation from Seven Brew, end quote, said Vanessa Medina, executive director of the Midland Humane Coalition. Quote, our shelter is proud to be a no-kill facility, and with this generous donation, our staff will be further equipped to help each animal find their forever home, end quote. The Seven Brew team is also preparing for a second stand opening in Midland later this spring, located at 3316 West Loop 250. To celebrate, Seven Brew will donate free coffee to local community organizations. Out and about. Senior Life offers an evening in Paris. Guests were transported to the streets of Paris during Senior Life of Midland's An Evening in Paris fundraiser held at the Petroleum Club's upstairs landing. The event featured a palette of Paris-inspired balloons in taupes, charcoals, russets, and pinks adorning the staircase to the second floor, where attendees were greeted by whimsical black and white umbrellas suspended from the ceiling. A Parisian bakery facade, complete with a bicycle and bistro table, set the stage for memorable photographs. The fundraiser showcased a variety of silent auction items such as jewelry, custom holiday cakes, hand-painted art, and tickets to Rockhounds games encircling the upstairs walkways. Inside the main ballroom, the decor continued with silk black and white striped table runners contrasting against solid black tablecloths. Centerpieces varied from Eiffel Tower motifs surrounded by pearls and candles to vintage bird cages with hot pink roses. The dining experience included a wedge salad, toasted baguettes with flavored butters, and pétifors. Jay Hendricks, serving as the MC, opened the evening, followed by Andy Schaefer leading the prayer. The dinner featured chicken steak bites over onions and mushrooms, broccoli, and au gratin potatoes. Kathleen Kerwin Haney, the executive director of Senior Life, spoke about the impact of community support on their programs, including Meals on Wheels. Dean Byram, board president, excitedly announced the organization's impending move to a new facility on Midkiff Road. A live auction featuring trips to Sonoma, California, jewelry, and a dinner prepared by Chef Michael highlighted the fundraising efforts. Raffle prizes included old Rip Van Winkle bourbon, a French bistro set, a champagne basket, and a piece from Occasion's Fine Jewelry. The evening concluded with guests dancing to the Basin Big Band. Senior Life of Midland's programs include Meals on Wheels, Homebound Services, Foster Grandparents, and the Senior Companion Program.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.